Okay, so we're going to do the story of Achan in Sefer Yehoshua. Okay, so Michael Goldberg showed this to me and asked me about it and thought it's really interesting. So if you want to follow, and I have a few Yeshuas scattered around the table there. Okay. If you don't have it, it's not a big deal. You can just follow along. But okay. So, what? Yeah, when you find it. Okay. So we'll start with in Yehoshua Vav. So there's a tiny bit of background. So there was this battle against Yericho. Okay. So the Jews won the battle. So this is in Yehoshua Vav Yud Zion. Okay. So it says V'ha'yisoha Yerchirim He. So they basically conquered the spoils of the city, but the spoils were cherem, were like designated to Hashem. Okay, it means you're not allowed to take it. Rak rachav hazona tichya hi v'chal ha'sheita b'bayis ki hechba samachon she'shalachnu. Okay, so fine, that's the side point. Rak atem shimru mena cherem. Jews, you guys, guard yourself against the cherem. Lest you use this cherem, these spoils which are designated to Hashem. And then you're going to end up making the Jews destroyed, and you're going to ruin them or trouble them. Okay? So, v'chol kesev u'zahav u'klin echoshes u'varzal kodesh hu la'Hashem, otzar Hashem yavo. So all the gold and the silver and the bronze and the copper should all be kodesh Hashem, should go to the treasury of Hashem. Okay? In other words, don't touch the spoils. Okay? Fine. So that was the command. Okay, so they won, they got a lot of stuff. But basically the command was make sure you don't use these things. Take it for personal wealth. But it's designated Lashem. Okay? Sounds good?
Question.
Yeah.
Who are we fighting against right now?
This was against Yericho, the city of Yericho, when they were conquering Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So this is the spoils from the city of Yericho. Okay. So then I'm going to jump to the next parak. Okay. So parak Zion. Vayimil v'nei Yisrael ma'al b'cherem. And the Jews trespassed against the cherem, against these spoils which were off out of bounds. Vayikach Achan ben Karmi ben Zavdi ben Zerah Hamate Yehuda min acherem. So this fellow named Achan from Shevet Yehuda, he took from the spoils. Vayicharaf Hashem b'vnei Yisrael. And Hashem got angry with the Jewish people. Vayishlach Yeshua Nashim Yericho Ha'ai Asher in Beis Avin Mikedem Beisel. So basically after that, we're going to come back to Achan in a little bit, but basically then Yeshua sent spies to Ai. That was the next town from Yericho to Ai, which they were going to conquer. And they spied it out. So basically the spies said, you don't have to send all the Jewish people, the whole nation, this is not a very tough enemy. If you send 2,000 or 3,000 people, that'll be enough. Okay? So sure enough, Vayalu minam sham k'shoshes alaf mish, vayinu sifnei anshei. So sure enough, the Jews sent 3,000 people to fight against Ai. And the Jews ended up having to run away. Vayaku mehem anshei ha'ai k'shloshim v'shisha ish. And the people from Ai, unfortunately, killed 36 people, 36 Jewish soldiers. So basically, it melted the hearts of the people. Okay, because here it is, they're supposed to be going to Eretz Yisrael, conquering Eretz Yisrael, right, as was planned. And sure enough, they go and fight Ai, and 36 people die, and they run away. So Yeshua ripped his garments. And they were mourning Yeshua and the people. Yomer Yeshua, Aha, Hashem Elokim, Hashem, Lama Havarta Havir Samazes Yarden, Lassif Son Yad Hamor Havidena. Why do you bring us across the Yarden to destroy us? Were we going to be killed by the Mori? What was the point of this? We should have stayed on the other side of the Yarden. I'm in Perek Zion, Pasuk Zion. Okay. So we would have been better off if we didn't cross the Yarden. What was the point of this? I thought the point was to conquer, not to come and get conquered. What am I supposed to say now after the Jews ran away from the enemies? V'yishmu ha-kanani v'chol yoshvei ha-aretz, and the Kananim and all the other people in the land are going to hear. V'nasavu aleinu v'chrisa shmeinu man-aretz, u'matas l'shem chagadol, they're going to destroy us. What's going to happen with your Shem Hashem, with your great name? Right, this is the beginning of the end here. Now all the enemies are going to sense weakness, and they're going to come after us. So Yeshua says, Hashem, what's going on here? Vayomer Hashem l'Yoshua, kum lach, lama ze'at anofal p'nach. Get up, why are you falling on your face? Chata Yisrael. You didn't realize the Jews sinned. V'gam avruas brisi asher tivizios, and they violated the covenant, the bris. V'gam l'kachum v'nacheirem. V'gam ganvu, v'gam kichashu, v'gam somu v'chleihem. They took from the cheirem, they stole, they lied, they put it in their, hid it away in their bags. So basically, they're not able to rise against the enemies because they're sinful. Right? I'm not going to be with them unless you destroy the cheirem, the spoils, from amongst your midst. And then he'll be with you. Hashem saying, "I'll be with you guys again." Kum kadesh asam, go sanctify the people. Vamartim eskad shel machar, get ready. Ki kol mar shem alkeishu achem mekirich haYisrael. There's a cherem. There's amongst your midst. Lo sucha lakum v'nei vecha adeshechem achem mekirichem. You're not going to rise up against your enemies until you get rid of this cherem. V'nikravtem avokel shivtechem, and you'll get up in the morning to your shvatim. Ayashevet hashir kidenu Hashem. Yikrav l'mishpachos. So the shevet which they're going to draw lots, and the shevet which is drawn in the lottery will come forward, and they'll split up into families. Hashem, and then the family which is chosen will break up into sub-families. And then that house will be chosen into individual people. In other words, they'll have a lottery where they whittle down who's the one who's guilty. Okay? However it works. And the one who is actually picked, Yisarif Ba'esh, you'll burn him in fire, Oso, V'eskal Asher Lo, him and everything with all his stuff. Ki Avar Es Bris Hashem, V'chiyas and Vala Yisrael, because he violated the Bris and he did this terrible thing amongst Kal Yisrael. V'yashkim Yoshua V'avokir V'ikar V'sishol HaShvata V'ilakit Shevet Yehudah. So sure enough, they did it, and it picked Shevet Yehudah. V'yakir V'nishprachas Yehudah V'yakodnus V'shachas Azarchi, and they chose the family of Zarchi. V'yakir V'smishprachas Azarchi L'gvarim V'ilachit Zavdi, and they picked Zavdi. V'yakir V'sbeisa L'gvarim, and they split the men. V'ilachit Achan Minakarmi Fon. So basically it landed. They did the whole elaborate process, and it ended up landing on this guy, Achan. Sure enough, the guilty party. Yes, Shira?
Why are they doing like a goral or a rat?
Good question. Well, I'm just want to first. I'm going quickly because I just want to get through the pshat, and then we'll ask a bunch of questions. Okay? So a good question. It's a strange way. Yes, agreed. Vayomer Yeshua Lacham, Bini Simna Kavod Lashem Elokei Yisrael V'Sein Lo Toda V'Hagin Ali Me'as Isa Al Techachem Ani. Please do a Kavod Hashem and admit. Tell me, what did you do? Don't hide anything. Admit. Ayan Achanes Yeshua Vayomar. So Achan answered, Amnach Anuchi Chatasi Lashem Elokei Yisrael V'chzos V'chzos Sisi. I did sin, and I did the so-and-so. Ve'er B'shala Deres Shinar Achas Tova. And I saw in the spoils, I forget exactly what these things are, but some sort of a piece of a garment, like a nice garment, U'masayim Shkalon Kesef, and 200 coins of gold, of silver, V'lashon Zahav Echad, Chamishim Shkalon Mishkalo, and some sort of tongue, a golden tongue or whatever, of a strap or whatever. Ve'achmadim, and I desired them, Ve'achachem, and I took them, Minim Temunim Ba'aris, B'soch Ali, Ve'achazot Tachtah, and they're all buried in my tent. Go check it out. Sure enough, it was all buried in his tent. They brought them, sure enough, they spread them out in front of Hashem. So he took, Yeshua took Achan and all his spoils. V'ezbana v'ezbinosav, and his sons and his daughters, v'ezshoro, v'ezchamoro, v'ezsono, v'ezalo, v'ezkalashelo, his cattle, his donkeys, his sheep, his tent, everything, v'chol Yisrael imo, v'yalu osem ha'kach, and they brought it to this valley. Ayomer Yeshua ma'achar tanu, y'archacha shamayam, as a you, you know, if you do a translation, achar tanu, it's like to mess us up, you messed us up, Hashem will mess you up. And all the Jews stoned him. And they burned all of the stuff. All of his stuff. And they stoned them also. And they made a big pile, a monument by Yashem Hashem Echaron Apa. And then Hashem's anger was stopped. Okay. And then Hashem told Yeshua, now don't be afraid, go and fight against Ai and you'll win. And then sure enough, they won and everything was great. Okay? End the story. Okay, so one question, Sashira asks, why are they using the lottery? Okay, as opposed to?
Hashem, you just tell them who the person is.
Yeah, exactly, let Hashem say. If ultimately, anyways, Hashem just telling them who the person is, so then let just Hashem say.
Well, so it's a strange way of doing it. Even if you want to say that, it goes by human nature, or that would mean that you have to do your ishtalos, but that's not ishtalos. Like doing miracles, that's the biggest sign of something being random.
Right.
And here, we're using it to specifically find the right person.
Right, exactly. It's not like you're doing an investigation. It's just totally like a random thing, and you're saying it's Hashem directing the randomness. So just have Hashem say it?
Right.
Yeah, excellent. The Gemara asks, it's funny, because the Gemara asks, it says, this is the Gemara. The Gemara talks a little bit at length in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Gimel on the base. Okay, so it says, Yeshua said to Hashem, he says, tell me who sinned. So Hashem says, what do you think, I'm a tattletale? Okay. Bechidaltar anilach. He says, make gorals and do it, and that's what's going to happen. Which is funny though, because ultimately it's still a tattletale. If you say that's a tattletale, then it's still a tattletale. Right? I mean, what's the difference if you tattletale through lots? Someone asks you to tell on somebody, say, no, I'm not going to tattletale. Well, we'll just do lotteries, and you'll just shake your head every time. Right? Same thing, it doesn't really, right? Okay, so that's a good question. Why do it through lotteries? Okay, good. Any other questions?
Why did he burn him and stone his mouth?
What's that? Why did... Okay. Right, why they burn all his possessions? Just burn the stuff from the spoils? Let me just see if I could close the doors in there.
Were they supposed to ultimately burn him, but then they
stole
him?
He's not here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I think you said that Hashem said that they would burn him, but then they ultimately stole him?
Yeah, it sounds like it means they burned the stuff and they stoned him. It's not clear what his sons and daughters are in the mix there. Did they stone the sons and daughters? It's not clear. We'll see. Gemara's going to take that up a little bit. But he's bringing them together in the whole mix, and then it says it's stone. It's not 100% clear what are they doing there. Right? It'd be funny to say that they're getting stoned. What did they do? Right? But we'll get to that. We'll get back to that. But yeah, what's the... So Tamar's saying, what do you need all the stuff? Just take the spoils and burn that and kill him, and that's it. Okay, good.
I have a question. Could you just give the historical background of what's going on here? Like, did B'nai Israel, enter Eretz Yisrael yet? Or, like...
They entered Eretz Yisrael, yeah. They're beginning their conquest of Eretz Yisrael.
That's
so this is the beginning, yeah. So this is,
right?
Yeah, I don't know if there was some other place beforehand, but it's towards the beginning of their conquest. Okay, I'm not holding exactly, but Yericho they did, and they're about to move to Ai. So Yericho they won, and now they're hoping to win in Ai, but now they get detained because of this problem. Yeah.
I don't really understand why it's such an issue for them to take advantage of the spoils. Like, that's the way war works.
Yeah.
You take over a country, and you get... I mean, assuming it's not like over to Zaro,
right.
Left Egypt with tremendous wealth. Like,
right. Good question. Right here? Yeah, good question. Who cares? Why can't we take the spoils? Okay. Good.
Is it specifically Israel they couldn't take the spoils, or every city?
I don't know. Good question. Not sure. One second. I don't know. Okay.
I don't know if this question was asked already, because it's a little bit hard to hear other people's questions. But why, if this was just really like one guy and the whole Jewish people were not taking spoils, then why did they lose the war because of this? It seems like a national position.
Right. Yes. Excellent question. Right. I mean, well, it's just one guy doing this thing. So look, he's one sinner. Fine, but and what happened for this one sinner? 36 people were killed in this war, and the whole conquest wasn't going to go forward, right? That doesn't sound very just, right? After all, just one guy, right?
Well,
it's always one bad apple.
Okay,
good. Okay, good. Excellent.
Also, with the spoils, I feel like, maybe part of it was like showing that we're doing this with James Shamayim, and so like we can't take the spoils from other people because that's like for our own benefit, and then it's going to make us feel like we actually like killed those people off for like for their money, as opposed to doing it just because Hashem told us to do it and to get this land.
Okay, good. Okay, so you mentioned Shir well, this thing of Kodesh Avraham Zelzeh. So the Gemara asks more about this. It says like this. First of all, they learn out from the Pesukim, because it said, Amna chatasi, the Pesuk said, Amna anuchi chatasi l'Hashem l'Kishal, I sinned, when Achan admit, I sinned before Hashem, v'chazos v'chazos asisi, and I did like this and like this. It's like repetitive, it's like this and like this. So they learn out that it means he really has done this before. He did three times he took from the soils, twice in the days of Moshe, and then once in the days of Yeshua. And then a different Amora learns there was five times. Four times in the days of Moshe, and one time in the days of Yeshua. In other words, he's a repeat offender. This wasn't his first time he did this type of thing. Okay? So the Gemara asks, he says, oh, if that's the case, then why wasn't he previously punished? Right? If this is his first time, I understand, but now, or why wasn't Klal Yisrael previously punished? Right? This is the first time. You tell me he's a repeat offender, then why is this the first time we're hearing of it? Oh. So it says, because we're not punished on the Nistaros, the hidden things, until we cross the Arden. Okay? Until we cross the Arden. So what does that mean? So this gets into this, what Shira is mentioning, it's called Shal Raven Zebesa. So there's a pasuk which says in Devarim, Kaftas, on Nistaros l'Hashem Elokeinu, the hidden things, hidden Averos, presumably this is the interpretation, the hidden things are to Hashem. Niglos, but the revealed things, Lanu Uvanina Adolam, are to us and our children forever. Okay? So the interpretation, the plain interpretation, means that the hidden sins are between us, a sinner and God. They don't affect Klal Yisrael. But the revealed sins are to us and our children forever. In other words, it's our responsibility. Okay? Those sins which we know about, which are public, that's our responsibility as a nation. But those hidden sins, that's between Hashem and the sinner. It's not our fault, we don't have anything to do with that. That's the plain interpretation of that pasuk, which is reasonable. Public sins, we're a nation, we have to be concerned about other people's public sins. We can't just be concerned about ourselves, we have to be concerned about other people. But hidden sins, we don't know about hidden sins. That's Hashem knows about hidden sins. Okay? That's the plain shot. But then there's a strange thing, which there are these dots in the Torah. In the Torah itself, on top of the Torah doesn't have nekudos. But it does have, in certain random places, there are dots. Not random, in certain places, dots. And on top of these words, lanu l'vaneinu, or I forget which words, lanu l'vaneinu, and the ayin, and la'ad, ad, and there are dots. Okay? On top of the words. Okay? Let's see, one second. Sorry. Okay, let's see if I can see that. Okay, I think we should have it in here. Let's see. So you've never seen this, it's kind of interesting. Test. Okay. Okay, here we go. Here, so if you look, if you just pass it around here, it's in Pasuk 28 on the right page. You can just see there's like dots. If you see on the see the dots?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, this is the Torah side.
Oh.
See, that's actually what it looks like in the Torah.
Oh.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
The dots, you could show it. See, so actually in the Torah itself there are dots above these words. Okay? So it's surprising, because the Torah doesn't have, you'll see, there on that side, There's no anything. They're just letters. But in some places, there's a few places in the Torah where you actually have those dots.
You're showing a random place in the Torah where it does this.
No, this is this spot. This pasuk. You see on the words on the Torah.
This is the Varim Nisavim.
Yes, exactly. That's where the pasuk I'm reading from, the Varim Nisavim.
Where in Yoshua?
Yes, so but the Gemara which is being quoted is from Varim Chavtas. Yeah, that's the Torah, Yeshua. Yeah. So, what? It's weird, right? Chavtas. Oh, pasuk on his parachavtas. Pasuk is a chavtas also. You see it? It's on the right side, the right page. You see the dots? You see those dots? 28. Okay. So what are the dots? So dots are there to teach us something, and there's machlokas between the dots, almost like qualify it. Okay, and the qualification is, this is the way the Gemara learns, machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah, somehow, but somehow it's telling you that this is the way it was prior to crossing the Yarden, but after they crossed the Yarden, things were different. Okay, after the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael and crossed the Yarden, things were different. It didn't go that the Staros are to Hashem, and the hidden things are to Hashem, and the public, the public things are everybody's. So how so? So the Gemara says that even Rabbi Yehuda learns that even once we cross the Yarden, then we are now collectively punished even for hidden things that an individual does. Okay? So even though prior to entering there to Israel, that was the case, we were only punished for public sins, but private sins were between Hashem and the sinner. But once we cross the Yarden, then all of a sudden Klal Yisrael Reven Zevuzah, and we're all responsible for each other's sins, whether we know about them or not. Okay? And that was a special bris, which the Rashi brings down by the Har Gerizim and Har Abel, when there's an additional bris between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. That's what we accepted upon ourselves, responsibility. Responsibility for the entire nation, whether or not we know about their sins or not. Okay? And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. And therefore, prior to entering Eretz Yisrael, when Achan took from the spoils of war in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, that was before they crossed the Yarden. Well, then it's not our responsibility because it was a private sin. No one knew about it. But once we get across the Yarden into Eretz Yisrael, and now we have this higher level of responsibility, even though it's a private sin, we're still responsible. Okay? And that's why, even though he's a repeat offender, the prior offenses are not punishable to the nation. This is a private thing. But now that we cross the Yarden, now we have 36 people in Klal Yisrael die. Because of this, it's going to throw off our entire conquest, and so on. Okay? And that's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Nechemiah says, no way. You can't punish. It says, Ad Olam. And it's also Ad Olam forever. How could it be that you're ever going to punish the nation for individuals' private sins? No way. It's not true. Rather, the dots show us that prior to entering the crossing the Yarden, even the public sins were not our collective responsibility. But our collective responsibility for public sins begins after we cross the Yarden. But private sins, we're never responsible for those. Okay, so it's like an argument about the degree of our Klal Yisrael Reven Zevuzah. Are we collectively responsible for sins that a person does only if they're public or even private? Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you say even private, then we understand why we're being punished for Achan. But the Gemara asks, if you say, like Rav Nechemiah, that we're not responsible for their private sins, so why did we get punished for Achan? Right? So the Gemara answers, because his sons and daughters knew about it. Okay? His wife and his sons knew about it. Okay? And since his wife and his sons knew about it, now it's no longer private. Okay? So once it's like, I saw someone ring down. Like by Lashon Hara, you say once three people hear about it, it becomes like public. That's what I'm saying. It's like once it's already known by three people, then it becomes public. And therefore, it became our responsibility as a nation. Yes?
But you said before that when someone sins, it goes on to their family and their for generations. But that's if it was a private or a public, which one was that?
Well, that's all Klal Yisrael. The ends of the family. That's Klal Yisrael as a whole. Lan Olvenenu means all of Klal Yisrael.
Oh, so it's not just the person and their family.
No, right. It's all of Klal Yisrael. Right. But that's the machlokas. Is it only by private sins, or is it only by public sins, or is it even by private sins? That's the machlokas.
Also, Oh, because I was thinking that if it was just for the family, I was going to say that I thought when you do a sin, it only affects your family for four generations. Not
oh,
for,
I see.
Like, forever.
Right, yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, this isn't just family. This is all of Kali Yisrael.
So if you do a public sin, it affects, like, the entire world forever, like, all Jews forever?
Well, I'm not sure if it means it affects them forever or it means where eternally this is the system which Hashem is going to hold us accountable for. I don't know if it means a particular sin goes on forever as much mm-hmm. as this is the eternal treaty between us and, you know.
But then which sins would it be that it's only for your family for four generations as opposed to this where it's forever?
I don't know. Good question. Okay, but that's asking to compare this and that, but we don't understand this yet. So that's, and then we don't understand that either. So that's like a more advanced question, you know what I mean? So I think in general the way I try to learn is to try to focus, you know, one thing at a time. But so you're asking a very good question, but it's too advanced for me. Okay? Okay, but it's a good question. Okay. So this whole thing is interesting, right? Because now it kind of doesn't help much. Because bottom line is, if we don't know about it, then how are we responsible for it? I understand that he's saying his family knew about it. Fine. They should have told people. They're part of the Tzibor. It becomes public. Fine. But if you're saying is that it's private, you say, oh, the Kali Yisrael Rebbe was that. Okay, I know that's a nice principle. But what's the sense of that principle? It doesn't seem fair or just that Hashem's going to hold us all responsible for a private party's sins. We cross the Yarden. Okay, so we cross the Yarden. And anyways, why should the justice change once we cross the Yarden? What's the difference, really? If you say the principle is the hidden things are to Hashem, so now what? Now we cross the Yarden, all of a sudden now we have to be worried about them. How is it fair to hold us accountable for this? Okay? Okay, and one more thing I want to read, and then we have to think a little bit. So the Gemara then asks, a little further down, it says, basically, if he sinned, what did his sons and his daughters do? Right? As we mentioned that before, so the Gemara openly asks that. So it says, oh, and I'll ask you the following. If he sinned, what did all of Klal Yisrael do? Because when it says he gathered his sons and his daughters and all the stuff, and all of Klal Yisrael, and they all went together at a certain place. So it's true, it mentions his sons and his daughters, but it also says that the whole nation gathered. So why is the whole nation gathering? They didn't do anything. So it says clearly the reason why you gather the whole nation is Lorad Dosan. Means to to give them Musar, if you will, to put them in their place. The Radosa, they say, is to subdue them. Rashi explains, the Radosa means Shiyiru Eskulkulo, that the Jewish nation would see his downfall and being stoned. V'yizaru v'atzman, and they'll be careful, lo yosifu limo b'cherem. They won't sin further going forward. So that why is all Klal Yisrael watching? To teach them a lesson. Well, that's why his family was watching, to teach them a lesson. So his family needed a better lesson because they were like, I guess, closer to him. So it's saying is the reason why, if not that we're stoning the family, no, they didn't sin. But we are bringing them up close and to see his punishment in order to put them in their place and make sure that they don't learn from his lesson, that they, you know, they overcome the thing. Okay. So basically, this is all the facts I got here. So basically, so we got two main problems, I guess. Or one main problem and then maybe a side problem. One is, why is everyone responsible for his sin? Okay? And just because you say principle of Klal Yisrael Rebbe Zev was that, it seems to be require some justification. Despite the fact that Klal Yisrael Rebbe Zev was that. Right? Be like a class, you know, in a classroom. One kid talks and they punish the whole class. They say, it's not fair. Hey, you're all Klal Yisrael Rebbe Zev was that. Yeah, but it still doesn't seem fair. So isn't there supposed to be justice? What's the sense of it? So it doesn't help if a teacher just says, well, that's the rule. Well, it's very nice that's the rule, but it's not a fair rule. So the rule should be fair, and it seems like the rule which the Torah expresses prior to them entering the Yarden was that rule, which seemed to be a fair rule. That after all, private is private and public is public. But now we cross the Yarden, all of a sudden the rules change and now it becomes unfair. Hopefully not, right? And then, secondly, so that's the main problem, as I see it. But the second question is, Shira's other question is, what's the whole lottery deal here? Right? Why are we doing it through a lottery? That's, I think, somewhat peripheral, though not the main problem. It's just interesting. Right? But also, a good question. Yeah. But I guess it's not this punishment thing, going back to the first question, the fair, it's, you see, it's not only by Achan, I guess it's somewhat of a more general type of principle, the accountability of Ka Yisrael for one another. Okay, so what do you guys think?
I mean, I agree with what you're saying, that, like, yeah, like, it actually really reminded me of when I was in school growing up, and, like, I remember a teacher that said, like, oh, if the whole class doesn't do it, like, can do their homework, or doesn't, like, behave, whatever, then you can't get, like, extra recess, and, like, of course, there's, like, that one kid in the class that, like, doesn't do it, and you're like, oh, come on, like, you're gonna do it for all of us, and it's like, I'm, like, doing my best, I'm working so hard to get there, and then, like, because of somebody else, you know.
Right, exactly.
I hear that. Mm-hmm. I feel that is injustice.
Right. Good. So it's our job to try to defend it, because it must be Hashem's just, but right. Yeah. Yeah, so Lisa, are you going to say something or no?
No.
It looked like you are. No.
It was, no.
It's all good. No.
I'm formulating. I'm thinking.
Okay, think. It's all good. I saw somewhere they brought down Marsha. I wanted to defend it a little bit. He said, where did I see that here? Oh yeah, he wants to say the Marsha comments. We could see if we assess this. He says, although God will hold the entire community culpable for the covert sin of an individual, that is only if the public somehow contributed to the crime being committed. In the case of Achan, for example, the community was somewhat responsible for Achan's transgression, for they did not appoint guards to watch over the captured spoils of Yericha. Had they done so, Achan's seizure of property could have been prevented. So he's claiming... What?
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's claiming it's partially our fault. Right? It's true it was his sin. True. But that doesn't mean because it's his private sin, there was nothing that we could have done to prevent it. Right?
Wait, what could we have done to prevent it?
He's saying we could have put guards around the spoils. If the spoils are important not to touch them, then we should have put up guards. Right? Right, and once you realize his point, you realize maybe there are other things we could have done. Right?
It's kind of like putting up Gedarim. Like muksa so that you don't go fire.
Yes,
so.
Right. It's true. You see, that's part of the responsibility of the Rabbanan to make Gedarim, right? Asu Mishmeres Mishmarti. So you learn how you should make a fence. Right. Okay, good. So, it's a good direction, right? It kind of maybe opens things up, but I feel maybe we could develop it a little further, yeah?
What was supposed to be done with the spoils?
I'm sorry?
What was it that they were supposed to do with it, the spoils?
I'm not sure. It sounds like they were going to put it in the treasure house of the Beis HaMikdash, I think. It's not clear what was going to happen to it afterwards. I know. Yeah, I guess it wasn't like you destroy it. Like when it's a Avodah Zarah, I guess you destroy it. But here, I guess it wasn't. I think it said Otzar Hashem, right? Didn't I read that somewhere? I forget it was maybe in Parak Vav. You know, I didn't look into... Yeah.
Didn't you say
Hekdesh?
It was supposed to be
Hekdesh. Yes, it's supposed to be Hekdesh, right? Correct. The Kabayas, I guess? Yeah, I forget where it was, but it said somewhere where it was. So, yeah. Okay. Okay, any other thoughts?
I have like one thought about why things at least would be different when they cross the Arden.
Okay, good.
Which is that once they're in Eretz Yisrael, like, they have a different kind of responsibility because now they're maybe like by being a settled nation in Eretz Yisrael. Like, it doesn't explain about like fairness or anything like that, but it would at least maybe explain why they have a different level of obligation to keep people doing the right thing.
Right. Okay. That's a good idea. Right. Okay.
I have a question, but it's not fully related to what we're saying, so I don't know if you want me to say
it. You could say it, but I may not answer.
I guess I'm kind of wondering, like, why is it that Hashem just said that we could go into, like, Eretz Yisrael and just, like, knock out other nations and, like, just take the land? Like, why is that? To me, I'm sure it is just, but just to me, it doesn't seem just that we were allowed to just, like, tell nations to, like, take
right.
the land.
Right. Well, two things. The one answer is that we're killing them because they're evil. There are dollars and there are...
Is that a way to get a land? Because there's evil people.
Well,
so
I'm asking if you ask two questions. I'm saying one question is how do we kill them? There's two questions, the land and then the people. So the people are killing them because they're evil. You're allowed to kill evil people. It's a good idea to kill evil people. The land is the land which the first Rashi in the Torah addresses it. Hashem made the world and he gave the land to us. And the fact that they're in it, it's our land. Hashem is the one who made the land and he says it's the land which belongs to us.
Did they get, like, a notice when they, like, came to the land? Like, oh, you're going to have to give us up one day because it belongs to the Jews.
Well, I'm not sure when they conquered the land. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know if, see, that I guess gets down to the idea. Does a person intrinsically have a right of using the world, or is it Hashem's world? And you don't just get to say, because I got here first, it's mine. It seems that the Torah believes that Hashem created the world, and even if you don't have notice, but it's Hashem's world. I mean, they had notice that it's Hashem's made Noah. There's an idea of justice, and there are principles of evil, you know, good and evil. And you don't have the right just to be evil and to live. But that's my short answer, but...
Okay. I guess a different answer.
Yes. Yeah. But you can look at the first... the first Rashi in the Torah takes off. But I think it's the first Rashi in the Torah, yeah. But it's an interesting Rashi in the Torah, yes.
Maybe it's, you know, further on, when they're, like, living in there's an obligation to, everyone has a certain job. Certain jobs support each other. So maybe this is like changing that mindset to say, like, in the future, you're going to have to all do something because you're all part of something that you're interconnected to each other. And without that, it's going to break and not work.
Right.
So this is like the
good
beginning part of that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Okay, good. So let me elaborate when you guys are saying it. You're also saying it. That when, Amy, you just said very well, is that when we're coming, and I guess this is what tomorrow is starting, is when we're coming into Eretz Yisrael, our job is to be a nation, a light unto the nations, to be setting up a society in Eretz Yisrael, which is going to convey true ideas of how to love out Hashem, about a good way to live, about justice, about chesed, about all the different ideals of the Torah to the world. And that's our national mission. We're there to, not just for ourselves, but to convey to the world, to fill the whole world with knowledge of Hashem, and for the whole that we talk about in Rosh Hashanah, the whole world will recognize Hashem Elokei Yisrael and live a good life based upon our model. And that ultimately exists when we have a society in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's when we're wandering, we can't really function in that capacity. But when we entered Eretz Yisrael, that was the beginning of us setting up a society of a country which was built around teaching ideas of Hashem to the world and Kiddush Hashem. And that's what Yeshua said, what's going to happen to your Kiddush Hashem now? Right? Once they're starting to get, the nation's going to come and get us and it's going to undermine the Kiddush Hashem, it's going to be Chilul Hashem. Because, and that's what Moshe davened to Hashem all the time. What are the nations going to say? Because the value of Klal Yisrael is to teach the world Hashem is the true God and all the ideals of the Torah. So that's our national mission. The mission doesn't work if you're a tzaddik, but everyone else around you are a shaman. It's a collective mission. It doesn't work through individuals. It works because the nation stands by ideals. Because, unfortunately, people judge a group by the weak links in the group. And one bad apple could end up causing a certain impression by the onlookers. They judge people based upon the weak people and the sinners amongst them. And they don't say, oh, those are just sinners, but the system and everything is really good. Torah is great, Hashem is great, everything's great. That guy is just a sinner. That's not the way people look. When people see someone who steps out of line, or someone who does something which in their eyes is corrupt, well, then they project that onto the system as a whole, and that's like the Chal Hashem is so terrible. So we as a nation are responsible for one another, because not just because them as an individual, because our mission is not just for me to be a good person, is for me to bring about Kiddush Hashem. Well, I can't bring about Kiddush Hashem, the nation has to bring about Kiddush Hashem. One person doesn't bring about Kiddush Hashem, it takes a nation, and the nation as a whole has to work together. And I don't have to just guard myself, I have to make sure I guard other people. I have to set up fences, and that's why part of the Rabbanim are entrusted to make fences, to make sure we guard people, to set up guards, to make sure the spoils aren't taken, to educate those amongst us who we sense are angry or feel the need to take from spoils. And maybe Achan had his private thing, but someone should have realized he was a problem case. He had issues. Yes, he wasn't. In fact, the Gemara goes on to outline certain other averos, which he did. It's not a person who's this type of a person who can undermine the mission of Klal Yisrael doesn't exist in a hidden vacuum that no one could tell. There maybe it wasn't open that no one knew. Well, according to one pshat, his family knew. But even according to other pshat, his family didn't know. Doesn't mean they didn't have any markers, any signs, any. It doesn't sound like he was the most upstanding citizen, the biggest tzaddik, and then all of a sudden one day he snapped and whatever. That's not the way these things typically work. And if we realize how one guy like Achan could undermine our national mission, well then we're going to have to take steps to make sure that he's in line. And we failed in that. And the failure, I think Yeshira, you mentioned, is that the importance is that conquest of Eretz Yisrael is an idealistic, ideological conquest. We're conquering these nations because they convey their evil and they convey wrong ideas about God and about how to live, and we are one to teach proper ideas. So they are, the Torah talks about the toivos which they did, and they offered their kids up to their gods, and they were involved in all kinds of incest and all different types of toivos which they lived by. And we are coming into the land, wiping them out and setting up the land on a moral high ground on proper ideals and proper as the land which is built around Hashem. And if it looks like we're just trying to knock them out because we want money, we want all their wealth, then we're just another conquering nation who's just trying to kill other people in order to take to plunder all their spoils. That's not what conquest of Eretz Yisrael is about. The conquest of Eretz Yisrael is about setting up an ideological nation built around proper ideals of justice and the proper way to live and truth. So if we start taking their spoils, it could be that was the tzivoy. Don't take the spoils. The spoils are not about you becoming rich. That's not what's going on here. This is an ideological war of wiping out evil people and setting up a society around truth and about the knowledge of God. So taking even one person taking the spoils, now this is the way the war is going to become portrayed. Now the Kanani are going to know, oh, someone took our spoils. Or these types of things, it ends up creating an impact of the way the conquest is perceived, and ends up being perceived in the larger world. These things end up snowballing and could have an impact. It's important that Klal Yisrael as a whole has the proper attitude and conveys the proper attitude about what we're doing here. So once Achan is taking it, it undermines the way that the whole thing is going to be perceived. And that's our responsibility, because that will undermine our national mission, and we have to take steps. So whether it's like the Marsha said, that we should have put a guard, or it could be some other thing which we could have done, but that is our responsibility. Even if we don't know about, that's I guess the argument. Is it only if we know about the Avera, then we have to fix it? Or are we responsible even if we don't know about the Avera, because we have to know about the Avera. It is our responsibility to know about the Avera. What should we do? Well, there are a lot of things you could do. So in the classroom, I don't know. Maybe there are things you could do, maybe there are things you can't do. Maybe in a classroom, one kid is talking or whatever, maybe there's nothing we can do. But maybe there's something we can do. Maybe if the class as a whole said to him and sat this person down and said, listen, we're not going to tolerate this, and we have whatever. If you're going to do this, then we're going to blah, 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 I don't know. Maybe there's something you can do. Maybe in a classroom you can't do. But in a society where there's leaders and there's people and there are family members, there are often things that you could do. You have to see problems which could emerge in advance and try to deal with them. Now, it could be the idea is the lottery. I was just wondering. Maybe you could explain why it's a lottery. See, because if Hashem just says it's Achan, then we just feel, oh, Achan's one bad apple. But if you say, all of Klal Yisrael stand before me, I'll peck, with all of them, all of them. It's like everybody is partially guilty. And the further in is more and more and more guilty. The people who are more close in the circles are more guilty and more guilty and more guilty. But it's like by involving us, by if you single him out alone, everyone else says he's the one guy. But here it's like we're all in, you know, the further, closer and closer you get to him, there's more guilt, but everyone in a certain sense is on the hook here. So it's like by having Hashem choose it, by selecting him from amongst, it kind of allows us to appreciate the levels and the degrees of impact.
Everybody's kind of involved.
Layers. Yeah, everyone's involved and on different layers. Not equally involved, right? There's his family, his immediate family, his home, his Shevet, his the nation as a whole. So there are different layers of responsibility, but that is the way it works in a society. Right? In a society, you're responsible directly for yourself, for your home, for your community, for your state, for your country, for your Klal Yisrael as a whole, and that's part of the way it works, and you have to keep those types of things in mind. We do live amongst these layers. That's the way the world works and the society works. So that's arguably the idea of Klal Yisrael, as I would say. We're all responsible because we our mission is not an individual mission, but it's a national mission. And that ultimately was what happened in when we crossed the Jordan. Prior was like the setting up, before we had the land, it was all prior steps. But when we entered the land, then that's when there was no longer training. I guess the Midbar you can think is like a training ground. When we enter Yisrael, it's live. That is where it really counts. Because that's when the world, when we're a nation, the world is looking at us as a nation. This is where we have a place, we have a homeland, this is where we're, you know, where people are judging us from. Yeah.
What was the idea with the Lashon Hara? What was that idea?
With what?
The Lashon Hara, that if singling one would be...
Oh, well, that's a good question. The tattletale. Mm-hmm. You mean, well, Hashem said, I'm not going to tattle on you. I don't know. I'm learning more. It's more about saying is... I don't know. Could be that's a different idea. Maybe just trying.
I don't know.
Good question.
I had another question. I don't know. Why is it that with this particular sin, I mean, they could have there's like a lot of sins to guard against. Was this the only sin that the nation committed, and why?
Well, this is a sin which colors the perception of Kibush Haaretz. This is like the initial stage of entering the land and conquering the land. And that's what our involvement is. Yeshua, this is the stage of Klal Yisrael is at, is we're conquering the land. And the conquest has to be portrayed in the proper light. So this is not just a random sin, which is not central to our role at that time. That's what we were doing. We were conquering the land for 7 years, 14 years. And it's important that we conquer it in a proper perspective. It's not portrayed as a land grab, it's not understood as a land grab, but it's understood as an ideological mission.
But I mean, it wouldn't have been a bad thing if they had become like independently wealthy from these conquerors.
No.
It's just that you don't want it to be like individual people. Like.
Yeah. Well, also I think it looks like, well, the reason why we're conquering the land is because we want to become wealthy. And we want to kill them because we want their money. Mm. As opposed to saying is we're conquering the land because of the ideological purpose, and even if we don't get any money from it, we're not doing it now. You know, so it comes off as being we're looking for money. It colors the different things. We walk around wearing all the gold and jewelry and whatever. It just that's the way it looks like. We're just conquerors looking for spoils. But that's not our stated mission. Our stated mission is we're establishing a society built around the knowledge of Hashem. So it's by dedicating all the wealth to Hashem, it shows that's our purpose. That's what we're doing here. We're here because we're involved in an ideological conquest, not in a personal enriching conquest. Yes.
Well, I don't think it necessarily, in my opinion, don't think it has to do with like what it looks like to like the other nations, because I feel like we sometimes do things that do look weird to the other nations, and like I don't feel like we're like doing things based on what it looks like to them. I feel like we're doing it based on what's like MS. I feel like I'm making a distinction, but I feel like from the perspective of MS, it makes a lot of sense, like what you're saying, that like, that if we're if we're responsible for, like, for if we have to make sure that we're doing this, like, theologically correct, and the reason why we're taking the land is, like, to be able to do everything completely ideologically correct, then if someone's doing something that's not ideologically correct in order to get the land, then it doesn't make sense that we should even have the land, because that's the whole purpose of having it. So if in the process of getting it we're not doing it right, then it doesn't even make sense that we should have it.
But why can't we do it ideologically correct and also benefit at the same time?
Because that's not ideal.
The Torah wants us to be able to enjoy ourselves and to be able to have a good life and to have money. Why should we not have
because
good money also?
Then probably as part of human nature, like, there are people that would be fighting that war and would feel like they're doing it just for the sake of getting the spoils and not for the sake of, like, getting the land and, like, bringing in the right ideologies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, the Torah is concerned about people, though. You should know. The Torah says the nations of the world will see the Torah and they'll say, what a wise and discerning nation, this good and great nation, and the statutes are, you know, perfectly, are great, and Hashem answers them, and we daven on Rosh Hashanah, the whole world will know about Hashem. So we do care. We're not a society that only cares about ourselves, but we care about what the world thinks. And if the world is going to say that we're doing it for our own personal motivations, and they're not going to learn true ideas, but they're just going to label us as being, you know, a society interested in wealth, we care about that. We do care about that. Now, if the fact that we do tefillin and they think tefillin looks funny, that's fine. We have to explain to them the ideas. But if they're gonna judge us as being corrupt, then that is something we care about, because that's part of our national mission, is to convey ideas of not corruption, but of ideological people.
But I don't feel like the main thing of what we're doing is, like, making sure that, like, other people see it, like,
Hashem's, that's what Yeshua's tefillah to Hashem is, then look, the nations of the world are going to come and they're going to see this. That's what he said to Yeshua, and that was Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah, is that the nations of the world are going to say, Hashem wasn't able to take us and to bring us into Eretz Yisrael, so don't destroy us because worry about the nations. So it seems like Hashem and Klal Yisrael should be concerned about what the world is going to think, and that's, we're concerned about. We should be a light into the nations means we are concerned more than with ourselves.
But shouldn't there first be that layer of, like, us doing the right thing and then, like...
Yeah, but that's why I'm arguing, is that it is the right thing. If we take the money, if we take the land and we also be able to take the spoils and enjoy them, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And there are benefits. We live life of Torah, and we also, you know, we do it L'Shem Shemayim, but we also achieve the benefits, and Hashem gives us rain, and there's nothing wrong with us enjoying ourselves. Hashem wants us to be able to have physical good.
So you're saying the only reason why we can't have the spoils is because of what they would have said.
Yes.
Really, otherwise, like,
right.
As far as integrity goes, it would have really been fine to have it.
Right.
If it was the right mindset.
Yeah, if it was the right mindset, yes, I agree. I agree with your point, that if it was the wrong mindset, but it could have been in the proper mindset. But I'm saying the more primary reason here is that the conquest looks bad, naturally. Like you were insinuating before, is that, oh, we're just going and knocking other people out. With that sense is what it looks like. And we have to do things in order to convey that's not what it is. So if we don't do anything specifically to convey that, it's gonna look that way, you know.
And
when you have conquerors who don't take from it, whoa, they're not taking the wealth. Well, that itself makes an impression. It's not just that it looks bad; is that it looks awesome when we do that. Because who ever heard of that? We are conquerors who don't take the spoils and don't use them. These people must be portraying something of a higher, you know, a higher standard.
I guess I see it differently than you, because I feel like I'm not as concerned about them seeing a certain way. It's more like that for the people themselves, that they're working on their amigos to be on a level that, like, they shouldn't want to benefit from, like, other people's stuff.
Fine. We can go back and forth a few more times, but I think we're... Okay. You're entitled. Yeah. What's that?
In one case that we're talking about, you could argue that it's a bigger chilul Hashem, but they lost that one more than that person keeping an object, like a single object, but it seems like it attaches, if Bnei Israel is attached more to the conquest and to the material than the mission, in the long run that would destroy the whole thing.
Yes, right. It's true. That's what you're saying, is the mission cannot carry on, and if you're going to go on like this, you're not going to be successful. Our success comes from the fact that we're attached to the proper ideas, and if we're not, then we're not going to be successful.
I'm sorry, for Tisha B'Av, I heard a nice shiur on Sinat Chinam. It's because when we have it, we put ourselves before the mission.
Right.
Of doing a kiddush Hashem.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's good. You mean that's part of the chet of sinas chinam. We're not recognizing the mission as the national mission, but we're looking at it ourselves. Yeah, that's nice. Yep.
I have a question about this answer.
Yes.
It's not like a major question, I think, because there are like ways to resolve it. But so we were talking about like the effect of, let's say, like someone taking the spoils on Kiddush Hashem or other things. But if we're talking about specifically things that are done in secret that no one knows, like, how does that end up having an effect on Kiddush Hashem?
Yeah. Okay, good question. I know, I thought of that question. Okay, so what are the ways which you think you can answer it?
The best thing that I thought of was, I guess, like, sometimes somebody does something in secret, but then down the line, people hear about it.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking also. It's like the walls have ears, and they hear about it, or it makes its way known, or its impact is felt in subtle ways. And although no one knows in this particular thing, but maybe one day Achan will let it slip, or that it's just his attitude and the way that he carries himself, and it becomes contagious, and it has to be that we stay on that high ground as a nation, and don't small little secret private things have their way of multiplying and becoming known and more pervasive than they begin. So it could be that's what it's saying, is that even, and maybe that's where the machlokas is. Maybe that's what the other Tana holds, that look, as long as it's private, that's not our response. We're not held responsible for that. As long as it's made kept private. If 2-3 people know, then yes. But if no one knows, then no. But or it could be that's the degree of argument, is that are we even responsible for the private thing because theoretically it could get out? Or do you say no, until it gets out, that's not our responsibility? You know, that must be, maybe that's what they're arguing about. There's room to, to question how far Hashem holds us accountable for.
I mean, I think with money, like, it's different because it sounded like it was a lot of money, and so he's only going to use that for himself in private. No, it's going to affect his family.
Yes.
He's going to use that money for mitzvos, and
true.
Then those, what's going to happen with
it's
the money
true.
That's used for mitzvos, that comes from an avera,
going
to affect other
that's
people.
That's true. That's a good point. But yeah, right. How's he going to unload that money? Right. All of a sudden, he's going to be the popular guy. Yeah, right. He's not keeping it hidden under his tent forever. Yeah.
That's a stole a garment, didn't he?
What? A garment? Yeah, there was a material. I don't know exactly what they were, but yeah. Yeah, he'd wear it. Definitely. Yep. Yeah, and he's going to be this person who's a powerful person now, but he has this major defect. And now people, these things, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
In like a more modern day connection, you could think of like Bernie Madoff as a person.
Yeah.
Nobody knew.
Right.
They said nobody knew. His kids didn't know. His wife didn't know. Nobody. He destroyed so many people.
Right.
And it took. And most of them were Jewish. And it took all of them down because he had the secret also because he couldn't figure out how to fix the money and like.
Right. It ended up. Got
right. Destroyed everybody.
Yeah. Right. So. It's true. You can only keep it secret for so long.
Right.
Yep. It's true. I don't know his thing, but I wonder if that was no one knew or no one knew, but it could be people could have done something. I don't know,
Nobody asked.
Nobody asked. Oh, I see.
Everyone
all
was happy when they were making money.
Yeah,
they
right.
Asked
then,
how
yeah,
they
right.
Doing
right.
It.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. They turn the blind eye. So it could be that's kind of a laugh
right.
on.
Like
maybe beforehand he gave him rich. Maybe
right.
he was already rich and no one really looked. If he took spoils before. Maybe we chose not to ask. Maybe his family chose not to ask. Yeah.
Like maybe he's doing the things he's giving.
Yes.
He's
yeah,
forever,
right, exactly.
But then,
yes.
And then
yes.
it affects you. You
yes, definitely. Definitely. Yep. All right.
Thanks.
Okay. So have a good night, everybody. Okay.